holding the line
for the conservative movement.
This is Stacey on the Right on Sirius XM Patriot 125.
Hey guys, welcome to Stacey on the Right here on Sirius XM's Patriot channel. I have not been feeling well this past couple of days, but you guys know one thing that always brings me up, no matter how I feel, is knowing that I have 3 hours worth of cool bumper music and amazing guests. And so I'm very excited to have our first guest of the evening, Peter Glennon, joining us. He's the founder of the Glennon Law Firm PC, and his book is entitled, Am I Stuck in This Practice? A Guide on Non-Compete Agreements for Doctors, Nurses, Dentists, and Other Healthcare Providers. Peter, thanks for coming on.
Stacey, thank you very much for having me.
Okay, so let's talk about this book. I mean, obviously, you're an attorney and you practice, but this book is about an area of law that is kind of in the news a lot right now, with some people in government really being against non-compete agreements. Is that why you wrote the book?
Well, I can't say that I wrote it because of the recent rule proposals by the FTC or other governments. I really wrote it because this is my practice area. We do a lot of professional and executive employment law, and we focus a lot on the healthcare industry. So I was writing this because the same issues kept coming up with my clients. I 95% of the time I represent the employee, and I do also represent some employers. But when it came to non-compete agreements, I started to notice that although a lot of attorneys seemed to think they understood what they were, it wasn't exactly the case, and many employers might be misusing the non-compete. So I just wanted to have a handy guide for those folks out there who had questions about this before they got into it, the non-compete, while they were in the non-compete, and what they could do if they were trying to leave it with the non-compete.
Okay, so talk to us laypersons about the purpose of a non-compete and when it is most commonly when you would expect as a healthcare worker to see your boss bring a non-compete and ask you to sign it.
Sure. So non-competes have been around for a very long time, and they're effectively a contract. It's just an agreement between the employer and the employee under which they both make promises. So if the employer invests in the employee, whether it's with money, with time, developing that employee's presence in the marketplace, developing that employee's skill set, they're asking that, or if they share some inside information that the business owner knows, and which may be a strategic opportunity for the business owner to go forward. In exchange, they're saying, here, we'll give this to you, employee, and make you a better person, but you just have to agree not to compete against us. And that takes many shapes, but for a certain amount of time. So where you usually see non-compete agreements, especially in the healthcare industry, is with doctors, physicians, dentists, especially the specialists, higher-end specialists, neurosurgery departments, orthopedic surgeons, and it goes with all of them, but these tend to be folks who are marketed a lot, for whom the employer, the hospital, or the practice really invest in them a lot of money to get them better training, to get them access to better studies. And in exchange, you know, they basically build a star. They don't want the star to then take that investment from the employer and just go compete against them.
So then they're not really that bad, because if you have all of that investment, you expect wherever you had the investment poured into you that you would work there for a while. It's not saying you can't quit, but it's just saying you can't go directly to another competitor and use what you learned there, what they invested in you, against them. So it doesn't last forever. What's the typical length of a non-compete?
Well, so they can be anywhere from 6 months to 2 years, and it's historically been regulated by states. So it can be a little different, but I would say between 1 year and 2 years is very common these days.
Okay. So do you often see, once someone has basically they engage in a non-compete, they work for a company or practice for a while, and then they leave, do you see them successfully using an attorney to break a non-compete agreement?
Yes, and we do that a lot. And we can either do it at the beginning of the relationship where we negotiate and try to really narrow the language in a non-compete. But certainly if you have the non-compete, we could talk about how you come out of it. Because as you can imagine, a non-compete agreement at the beginning of the employment relationship is really there. Nobody knows what's going to happen down the road. So we don't know where this will be, how long you'll be with the employer or not. So it's generally drafted a little more broadly, but there's a lot of room to negotiate when you want to leave. And by the way, it's not just in the healthcare industry, of course. I have a second book coming out this spring that covers everybody else, right, outside of the healthcare right. industry. But at the higher end executives, professionals, whether you're financial, investment broker dealers, or if you're a high executive in any business. But the other side of that too, Stacey, is skilled jobs, skilled laborers. For example, I know of an HVAC company, air conditioning and heating, and there aren't a lot of people skilled in fixing, repairing, cleaning HVAC systems. So when there's such a dearth of possible employees, some of these larger companies, they open their own quasi-university. It would be a training program. Could be 6 to 8 weeks, where the company invests time, money, and skill developing people who are getting paid. And in exchange, they say, we'll train you. You have a job with us. However, here's the terms of a potential non-compete. So that makes sense, too. That's a pretty obvious way, I think, of looking at it, is if the company invests a lot of resources in you, they don't want you to take that and then go across the street to compete against them.
So with that in mind, the FTC's ban on non-compete agreements in healthcare, that will stand then because of the shortages? Because there are nursing shortages and doctor shortages, and they aren't looking as if those are going to be resolved anytime soon.
Well, there's a lot of shortages in the healthcare industry, especially in the state of New York, where I am. But I personally, as a practitioner, I do not expect the FTC rule to stand. It's already been, or opposition has been voiced against it by the American Hospital Association, by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. Everybody is expecting a legal challenge against it because it's really unique for the FTC to come out and try to do a broad ban on non-competes. I don't believe that they have the authority to do it. I think a challenge against any rule promulgated by them would likely fail. But then here's the twist, Stacey. Even if that rule went through, it is not arguable by the language of the FTC's statute that the FTC does not have authority over most true nonprofits. And that's where it comes back to the healthcare industry, because a large number of hospitals and health systems are nonprofits. Mm-hmm. So you could end up with a two-tiered system there between for-profits and nonprofits. So it's really interesting to see where this issue is going. And I'm happy to chat more about the background. But we knew that this was kind of the way the winds were blowing, that this administration some governments wanted to change non-competes. We've seen California all but ban them. Massachusetts has made it really tight. So there's been these changes going across the country, but it was unique to see the FTC come out and make such a broad sweeping ban. And I should note that it's been open to public comment. That was supposed to close this week, March 20th, but they just announced that they're extending it for additional comment on their proposed rule through April 19th now. So this is an issue that's just starting. And, you know, just again on the healthcare part, separate from the federal government, it was 2021. Maybe this will give you a good illustration, too, of what's happening in the healthcare field. In 2021, the District of Columbia itself, Washington, D.C., their government passed a prohibition on non-compete agreements for physicians who make less than $250,000. You can still have a non-compete for a physician making more than $250,000 in D.C. And that's really because it goes back to the specialists and the resources that are invested in them versus a general practitioner, for example. So there's a lot of discussions out there. And as I told you, I primarily represent employees. You think that I would be, my clients would be very excited about a complete ban on non-competes, but I find that they're not really that excited. Because if they want to break off from a company or from a practice and start their own business, and there's still no non-compete allowed, well, that could hurt them in trying to grow a business, as many have suggested.
Okay, you just perfectly segued into my next question. I was going to ask, what's the unintended consequence here? What will we see as something that then we'll need a solution to because of this new ban?
Well, if the ban goes into effect, there could be a lot of unintended consequences. One I already mentioned was a two-tiered system in the healthcare industry, because the FTC, if it goes through, it would not govern nonprofit hospitals and healthcare systems. So you would have some doctors who have non-compete agreements and other doctors who don't have non-compete agreements. And that would arguably set up a different labor pool, for example. I think the other challenge is, as I mentioned, every non-compete analysis is really unique to the individual, unique to the circumstances and the situation. I can even tell you that there are certain types of physicians for whom it's really hard to have a non-compete stand anywhere. So you're already have this unique situation, and now you go and you set up a two-tier system, you're going to have multiples of that unique situation, which is unfair to many people. But you'll also go back to the opportunities for people who don't have training, whether it's HVAC or in the IT industry. There will be fewer companies willing to invest those resources in them, and that could really result in less workers or less workers rising in their socioeconomic status. I mean, when everybody wants to, you know, work to live that American dream, if you have a complete ban on non-competes, there's an argument to be made that you'll lack the investment from the employers.
Oh, yeah. So you can see where this could actually be pretty harmful. And I know part of what they're trying to do is they feel like there's, you know, the non-competes are preventing people from going somewhere, and it's preventing movement. It's suppressing market forces that might be at play. But it's really hard for the government to make a blanket rule and take into account all of the different factors that you've described here, which are very nuanced and can also be different from region to region. Or do I have that wrong? Because I'm just wondering how can the FTC really account for all of the different things that would be at play here?
No, I think you've got that right, Stacey. I think the challenge is that there really appears to be a lot of confusion. A non-compete isn't just something that you have to, many people come out and say, well, it's for a certain amount of time and for a certain geographical area. But what really is missing from that analysis, the reality of non-competes is there has to be what's called a legitimate business interest to make a non-compete valid and enforceable. So nobody's talking about that. And what I see happening with some of this confusion, and I've heard it from the FTC as they roll this out, they wanted to talk about a phlebotomist who wasn't able to change jobs because of a non-compete. I've never heard of that situation. That would be more of a misuse by the employer, because I don't know, unless the first employer trained the phlebotomist, I don't see what that legitimate business interest would be, that resource that was invested in that person to stop them. And I've also heard from the administration, they talk about how non-compete agreements stop construction workers from changing companies. I've never heard of that myself, certainly with civil engineers high up in these companies, but I don't know about where you are. But there's been fewer and fewer contractors over the last few years, so there's not a lot of folks in the labor market. But I haven't heard of that. I have heard of small security guard companies that just put a non-compete in the employment agreement and then tell the employee that you can't go work anywhere else, again, without any investment in them, without any resources, without any legitimate business interest. So you do have those situations. And you did hear President Biden on the State of the Union talk about a cashier at a fast food burger place being beholden to a non-compete. I'm not aware of that either. That's a claim that was made by the campaign even before the 2020 election, and it was proven to be incorrect. At that time, it was suggested that McDonald's was doing it. Now, but it's not accurate. I'm not aware of a burger cashier non-compete. It is true. There are other companies out there. I remember 2014, 15, 16, that would have some otherwise invalid non-compete language in the employment agreement, but either a lawyer clarified the situation or a government agency stepped in and struck it down. So my point is the vast majority of non-compete agreements go to executives and professionals, and a lot in the healthcare industry, a lot in the technology industry, a lot for other industries where training is provided. But those aren't the topics that I'm hearing and seeing in the comments on the FTC rule promulgation. So my point is, Stacey, really, there's just confusion about it. And I think the better argument or better issue is the misuse of non-compete agreements where they wouldn't otherwise be valid. But nobody's talking about that.
Well, now we're talking about it. And I tell you what, the conversations that get started here on this radio air, here on Sirius XM Patriot, they ripple out, and we will often see things, kind of little known topics, bubble up here on the show, and then I'll see them on other big shows. And I'm like, hey, from us to them, good, because all I want is for people to talk about the truth, right, and to have an understanding of the issues. And I really feel like coming into this, of course, I know what a non-compete is, but I know a lot more about it now that I've had you here to discuss it and to answer all of my questions. And I know the value in this is for someone who's an employee out there who might be laboring under the idea that they can't leave their job when maybe their non-compete was just something that was, you know, kind of added in, like every plate gets some salad, where right. The reality is maybe they're not really bound by it and they need to seek some counsel. So what, as we close out here, and thank you so much for your time tonight, Peter, what would you recommend to people who, if they have a non-compete agreement, but they're not in a higher tier professional role, what do you recommend?
Well, first think through it. I mean, again, each fact, each person, they're all unique situations. Think, have you received some marketing support, other training? Have you received some investment from your employer into who you are and what you do? And if the answer is no, you should really contact an attorney, even just for a consultation, just to have somebody experienced in this area be able to provide you with a framework and explain to you what you may or may not be able to do. Because if you do just blindly violate a non-compete, whether it's valid or not, it can become expensive if people start running to court to try to stop it. But even if you think there has been investment in you, I suppose the best thing for people to do is to contact an attorney and just to have the agreement and the unique facts reviewed.
Yep, and also you're talking about exactly. An hour or so of time with an attorney that you will probably think to yourself, okay, money well spent. And also you get a little education out of that. I find every time we have a consultation with an attorney, it doesn't matter what it's for, I always leave there better informed. So even if we don't end up needing counsel, you know, ongoing, that amount of money was worth it for the information that I gained. I feel like I have more expertise. And also it gives you peace of mind to know that, okay, I am going to leave. I am going to seek employment elsewhere. And now I know I can do it without worrying, you know, kind of thinking in the middle of the night, ooh, you know, is somebody going to come get me? No, because you probably, you know, not a big deal there.
Right. No, you're right. And one other reason to go there is we're talking about non-competes and employment agreements. But a lot of individuals also receive them in stock option or equity agreements. And those are separate from the FTC rules. So the non-compete issue will still be out there. It can be very nuanced. And, you know, if I know what I don't know, I like to ask people so I could be better informed and move forward.
Yeah. It's a good way to run around living this world because people are litigious. And also, the government's always regulating. You know, we rarely have a day where there's not some new proposed rule. I'm kind of like, you know, we need fewer of those people making these proposed rules because some of them are really needed. I'm not against all of it. But I do think, sure, you know, they have to have something to do all day, right? They can't just sit there. So they have to make new rules. And that ends up causing most of us extra work trying to figure out what they're trying to propose and whether it applies to us and whether we're already violating it. And it just, we could use a break from rulemaking, maybe like a rulemaking holiday all the rest of 2023, no new rules.
I'll sign on. Yeah, okay. That sounds great. Everybody could catch up.
Right. That's what I was just thinking, that we could all, you know, schedule some time with our attorneys to catch up on all the rules from before this. That would give us a whole year to get that done.
I think that's a lovely idea.
Well, we'll see what we can do about getting that on in front of someone who can make that decision. Peter Glennon, founder of the Glennon Law Firm PC. The book is available wherever books are sold, but you know me, I'm going to recommend you head over to Amazon where you can get it right away. It's called Am I Stuck in This Practice? A Guide on Non-Compete Agreements for Doctors, Nurses, Dentists, and Other Healthcare Providers. Thank you, Peter. Have a great evening.
Stacey, thank you, and thank you for your service.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, you have a great night. Oh, that was so nice. Okay, 866-957-2874 if you want to join the show. And if you're driving, the link is in the show notes over at stacyontheright.com. You can buy the book by clicking through over there. And we've changed the format of the show notes. It's now show post, and tonight's is 3/13/23. So you can look for the date of the show that you're wondering about the guest. You can say, oh, it was last Tuesday. Look at your calendar, see what last Tuesday's date was, go to my blog, find that date, and you're in. We started it, I think, a week ago. So the new date system in the title will help you more easily find what you're looking for. Tell your friends about it. The show notes, they're really full of great information. We'll be right back.